What's the deal with this?
Deal? What are you saying?
Deal.
Deal?
I don't see what the big deal is, you know? It's not that great.
Good deal. You won't regret it.
What's the deal, son? What do you have going?
All right, look, here's the deal.
What do you say we're making some deal?
Walk through any major city and you will see vacant land or buildings. These are the weed lots, garbage-strewn, undeveloped spaces, or maybe even an older building or retail site that could use just a little bit of imagination. In some cases, neighbors have organized to transform these spaces into community amenities, such as a shared garden spaces, but all too often these lots and buildings persist as unrecognized opportunities for urban improvement. Today on the show, I am speaking with Brian Copley, CEO and co-founder of City Builder. City Builder determines the highest and best use of land and connects buyers and sellers of underutilized property. I'm your host, Ryan Cox, managing partner at Founders Grove Capital. My experience includes raising and structuring equity capital investments for more than $205 million in multifamily assets. I'd like to announce the first Austin Commercial Real Estate Tech event on October 25th at the Capital Factory. I'm very excited to bring together some of the brightest CRE tech founders and commercial real estate-focused venture capitalists to Austin. It is important as an investor to understand the technology that is shaping the future of commercial real estate. And with a thriving venture community, it is equally as important to nourish the small but growing list of CRE tech startups in Austin, one of the fastest growing cities in the country. Go to www.cretech.com/event/Austin to register. And welcome to the Real Estate Innovators, the podcast that explores innovation in commercial real estate with technology, design, and development. Celebrate the companies and innovators who are changing the business of commercial real estate and are inspiring the future of how we work, live, and play. I asked Brian about his background and what led him to the founding of City Builder.
When I was 15, I got a job at a software company cleaning the office. And my aunt worked there and would give me access to her computer. And from time to time, I'd get to play around on the software. It was a small software company, 15, 20 people. And they created solutions for people who needed to track things in the real world. I was curious about how it worked and decided that I'd start to play around with it and actually found a few bugs. And the founder of the company was shown the bugs I found, offered me a job as a software tester, and lo and behold, I had my first real job from about 15 to 19 for about 3.5 years working for a software company. So got early exposure to automation. This was a company that was using kind of a hybrid between the old world command line code DOS and some new world, you know, Microsoft Windows, NT, things like that, and a lot of database technologies. So I got to see early on how you could leverage technology to solve real world problems. And I think that would really be the beginning of my interest in tech. Went to the University of Washington in high school, got a couple years under my belt there. But instead of completing school, actually started working for my best friend's dad in real estate. My first day on the job, he walked me outside, pointed down the street and asked me which homes were for sale. And so I did what probably any early 20-something with no experience in real estate would do and pointed to the 3-yard signs on the street. And he said, "You're wrong. Every house on this street is for sale." Worked for him for a year, saw him prove it time and time again that indeed, every property was for sale for a certain price, and learned my first big lesson about real estate. One of the other things I learned a bit about was what I would now refer to as data arbitrage. And so the second lesson I learned from Rick, my first mentor, was that there are all of these different data points that correlate to value in real estate. So some of the ones that people are familiar with would be, you know, tax assessor information or recorder information or schools or zoning information. If you get into commercial real estate, you're looking at topography, you're looking at demographics. If you're looking at, you know, engineering or architecture, you're looking at lot lines and setbacks and parcel shapes and max height and all these types of things. And early on, I had exposure to just a few of those data sets. But what we would do is we'd go into his office. There'd be piles and piles of paper. He'd print these off. And then he would meticulously go through each of those data sets and say, the variance between this data point and this data point should be X. And when it's larger than that, highlight it. So I take out a old highlighter and I just highlight these different data points. And we would do this 3 to 4 hours a day. It was not my favorite thing to do. But I learned a lot about looking for data arbitrage in real estate data. And so Friday would come, we'd have gone through, let's say 700 to 1,000 properties, and we'd find 20 that seemed to be good opportunities to invest. And the next thing we do is jump on a MapQuest because there weren't a lot of GPS devices back then. We'd find a route and we'd go visit all the properties and we'd do property visits and walks. And we'd talk to the property owners and try to make a deal. We did about one or two deals a month for about a year. And this particular person made 10 to 15 times what I was making in my day job. I worked 5 a.m. till 2 p.m. in a day job. And I did all right. You know, had my own apartment, had my own car. Things were going great, had savings. But this guy was working probably as hard as I was working, making 10 to 15 times what I was. And at the end of that year, when everything was done, I had learned a ton about how to look for good real estate investments by leveraging data arbitrage and looking through data sets. And he never paid me a dollar, but he said, this is the most valuable education that I could give you, and I trust that you'll use it wisely. So around that time, my dad, who adopted me, was diagnosed with frontotemporal dementia, which is a particularly early onset and aggressive form of dementia that eats up the frontal lobes of the brain. As it does that, people lose their motor skills, they lose their capability to speak, they lose their capability to reason or be rational. And all of this was happening while I was kind of coming into my own in the real estate world. So I took some time and actually helped take care of my dad, moved closer to home. And this was late 2004. At that time, a good friend of mine said, hey, I heard about your dad. I'm sorry. I work for this company in the mortgage industry. I know you're more interested in real estate, but I figured that you might want to take a look. And I got the job for 4 years. I worked in the mortgage industry, was a top producer, became a manager, became a trainer, became I don't want to call myself a thought leader, but you know, I was quoted in some local things, wrote some articles that were syndicated nationally and internationally, got interviewed by the New York Times once. It was pretty cool. And what I started to notice was that a lot of the things that I felt were fundamentals in the industry that would provide for a good kind of foundation for real estate investment were eroding. The banks were lending to a lot of people, as we know now. Some of those were creditworthy and many of those were not. And I was just starting to see that the quality of the product that was being created in the lending industry was deteriorating. So I learned a lot about finance, about underwriting, had a little bit of a background in real estate investment. And that led to my career as an entrepreneur. I looked through, I don't even know, thousands of credit reports at that point. And decided that there was a kind of an algorithmic opportunity to help those who were barely declined or weren't able to get good lending products because of, you know, an anomaly in their credit reports, and basically created, you know, a handwritten algorithm to hack the credit bureaus, TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. Ran a business for 2 years profitably, basically looking at data arbitrage. Took people who were declined narrowly for loans from the government or declined narrowly for other big picture loans, you know, maybe a new car, and help those people understand how they could really quickly optimize their credit. And we did that for 2 years. I had a 96% success rate, didn't cash anyone's check until they got what they wanted. And yeah, it was an awesome business. Ran it with my best friend. We took no outside capital, able to save some money from that. Things were great. And then I wanted to scale it. And my best friend wanted to keep it as a kind of a closely held lifestyle business, and realized for the first time that it was really important that with a co-founder, I had similar ambitions or an alignment of ambition. So yeah, that's how I got into real estate. That's how I got into finance. I've started other data arbitrage businesses, including one with loan modifications before that was kind of a thing in 2008, 2009. Started another ad hoc business where I went to my first major league soccer match and left for 10 minutes from my seats, came back with a, you know, reloaded beer, and the only goal of the game had been scored. Got super frustrated about spending $100 on a soccer match where the only action happened while I was gone getting another beer. So started a business called Order to Seat, which allowed you to kind of geolocate your position with inside a stadium and have all the concessions show up on your phone. You can order the concessions. They run them out to you. You pay a dollar fee. The app kept the buck. And that was acquired by a company down in Florida. So that was exciting. I had really no business creating any kind of a consumer app and not much consumer mobile experience, but kind of lucked out on that one. And at that point, I decided that I wanted to go back to this initial principle I learned about real estate, maybe 4 or 5 years prior to that, that every home was for sale. And at the time, I had just transitioned into Wall Street, got my Series 7 and 66, was working for Wells Fargo Advisors. So learning about stocks and bonds and efficient marketplaces, and became fascinated with kind of the intersection of three Venn diagrams: efficient marketplaces, technology, and real estate. And that really kind of tells the early story of City Builder. What I noticed is that in most efficient marketplaces, you had an aggregated bid and an aggregated ask, and those would mesh together and create a rational clearing price. It's basically how Wall Street works. That is not how real estate works. We have kind of an ad hoc response to supply. So someone puts their home on the MLS and then buyers kind of respond to that. That data comes in pretty quickly nowadays, less quickly then, but pretty quickly now on lots of different platforms like Zillow and Redfin and Realtor.com. And people respond to it with bids. And then there's a broker who evaluates those bids and provides counsel and helps the deal close. And what I noticed was missing was the aggregated bid. And so I set out to solve that problem by creating a real estate buyer's listing service. If you look at the first letters of each of those words, you come up with an acronym called REBLS, and created a company called REBLS. And that was my first true foray into real estate technology. That was right around 2013, 2014. Met a guy after a soccer match, interestingly enough, who worked at Amazon. He was the designer of the Kindle for iOS. And he and I started REBLS together. He quit Amazon, came in, designed a beautiful product. We got some press, got a small amount of funding, hired a small team. I think we were five people, and built out this platform and launched it and created this, I guess a good way to describe it would be a match.com for real estate. So you type in your home's address, we'd show you based on all of the data that the buyers had created a match in kind of descending order, the same way you might see on match.com. We use people's Facebook profiles to kind of allow for a more personal connection between buyers and sellers. And when they got connected, we figured that they would close the deal. And what we learned was that in residential real estate, there was a major need for the broker to come in and be an arbiter of truth and experience and help people with legal documents, because people were engaging in one of the most financially important transactions of their lives that on average people go through 3 or 4 times. And so, so in a way, Rebels failed and it worked. It worked from the standpoint that we were able to actually make these great matches between buyers and sellers. It failed from the standpoint that we were unable to successfully connect them to a network of real estate agents to help them close on those transactions. Not long after that, and this is a long way of getting to the City Builder story, but I think if we've got a long form medium here, it deserves to be told, I suppose, and it gives you the whole story. Not long after that, I went to my investors and I made the case that we were solving a problem for the wrong actor in the market. So think 2013, 2012, you're starting to see an excess of demand. The market's changing. The recession's basically over and there are more buyers interested in properties than there are properties on the market. Get to 2014, 15, that problem's become worse and worse. And obviously, you know, now it's at a peak. There's a massive outstripping of supply from the amount of demand that exists for homes. We were starting to notice that problem. And I went to the investors and said, I think this should actually be a platform where buyers have the onus to go out and find sellers. And if you remember my first real estate mentor telling me that every home is for sale, I took that thought to the investors and said, I'd like to create a platform called Every Home, where we put a digital for sale sign on every home in the country. They trusted my gut instinct and we put the market out, or we put the product out in the market. Right before, within 4 months of launching that, prior to launching it, I had the opportunity to meet with some executives at both Redfin and Zillow. Zillow was very interested in what we were doing. Met with the CEO, met with a couple board members, including one of the co-founders. And they were super interested in a potential collaboration or maybe an acqui-hire. We had to make a decision. My co-founder and I decided we needed to put the product in the market and see what happened. So we kind of put that discussion on hold, launched the product. And a month into that, we looked at the data to see what was happening. And what we found was pretty interesting. It was not at all what we expected to see. What we found was that roughly 1 out of 5 of the power users of Every Home were who we expected them to be. They were buyers who were ma-and-pa home buyers looking for homes to live in. And they were utilizing this platform as a way to make bids or indicate interest on off-market properties. The power user who emerged from that platform that we never saw coming were commercial buyers and those who service commercial buyers. So think real estate investors, builders, developers, real estate investment trusts, private equity, hedge funds, contractors, brokers, architects, engineers, land use attorneys, those types of folks. And as we started to dig in and find out who was really getting the most value from this product we created, we learned that it was the commercial real estate folks, not the residential real estate buyers. And the big question my co-founder and I were left with was, what do they like about this? What's the reason they want this product? So we sat down and we started doing some user interviews. And what we learned was that commercial buyers, and this is a heuristic, it's not a statistic, so I can't give you any evidence for this. 90% of the time, we're looking at buying off-market property. So our platform that allowed them to bid on off-market property was a natural fit and kind of created a digital digital conduit to exhibit this analog behavior they've been doing for decades, maybe 100 years. Buyers would go and seek underutilized property and they would bid on it on our platform. When we dug further into that, what we found is that properties really can be evaluated based on their present use, or they can be evaluated on highest and best use. And builders and developers were looking for those properties that were severely underutilized according to highest and best use. So we spent 6 months digging into the pro formas and the, I guess I don't want to call them algorithms because they weren't really being operated by computers, but the, you know, the pro formas are back of the envelope calculations that builders and developers and architects and engineers and land use attorneys were using to determine feasibility of building commercial buildings, namely multifamily and office structures. And we found best practices. We put those into an algorithm and we ran a massive computation against the entire Seattle market. And what we learned was that there was $38 billion in profit potential in underutilized multifamily zone property in Seattle. We got a hold of LA data. We did the same calculation in Los Angeles. We found $216 billion in mispriced multifamily zone property in LA. And the numbers were just, I mean, as you can hear, the numbers were mind-boggling. We couldn't believe that there was that big of a delta. And we decided what we would do was create a national real estate arbitrage index. So think of a ranking top to bottom of every one of the 135 million U.S. properties in market perception of value compared to highest and best use value. And that was really our first product. Went out pretty excited with the product, looking to license the software and the technology to builders and developers. And one of our first big learnings in the commercial real estate industry was that builders and developers didn't have a line item in their budget for software. You probably know this all too well, Ryan, but builders and developers haven't had a lot of access to software historically. The way I see it, having worked in residential real estate and now in commercial real estate feels 5 or 10 years behind residential real estate as far as technology and automation is concerned. So, you know, we beat our heads against the wall for a while, did get some paying customers, had people who were using it love it. But those who couldn't quite sign the contract, we asked them why. And we kept asking and pushing and pushing. And finally, one of the builders told me, "Brian, this thing sounds great, but it also sounds too good to be true. We can't go out and pay for a contract for this, hoping that this thing will give us 100x, you know, efficiency gain and make us the best builder or developer in the world. And what we don't understand, Brian, is if this thing works so well and we're paying brokers $100,000 to $500,000 to find these properties, why wouldn't you just go use this tool to go out and locate the properties we want and we'll pay you, you know, at least $100,000 brokerage fee?" And I couldn't answer the question. And when I couldn't answer the question, I came to my co-founder and I said, "Why wouldn't we do this?" And he couldn't answer the question. I went to our investors and they said, "I don't know. Why wouldn't you do that? You're trying to make $500 a month on the software. Why wouldn't you go find them the sites, prove to them that it works, and collect a massive fee?" So we decided we'd do it. We closed down the SaaS product. We started to utilize the technology as a proprietary tool powering our, you know, data-enabled brokerage, and started to go look for those properties. In the course of doing that, we started implementing machine learning and artificial intelligence to start to predict the best use of all parcels. And we had a really clever reinforcement mechanism that we used to determine whether or not our predictions were working, and kind of created this interesting training data set. And at the same time, we hired a data scientist away from Microsoft, a PhD from the University of Washington, to start to create models around zoning to try to figure out how we could automate the translation of the massively fragmented zoning data in the United States. So if you want any idea around how fragmented that data is, there are 3,164 counties in the U.S. Each of those counties has its own zoning code. There are a massive number of municipalities and local jurisdictions that further fragment the zoning. And this creates a great opportunity for architects and land use attorneys and engineers. And we still think those opportunities exist at scale to a massive, massive degree. Those people provide lots and lots of value to the people they serve, the builders, the developers, the investors, and the owners and cities. But what we learned was there were some things we could start to automate. So as we looked at scaling highest and best use from market to market to market, we started to figure out some heuristics in automating zoning translation, and those started to work as we scaled those. And we've now gotten to the point where we've got pretty good data in on about 20 million properties, mostly located on the West Coast, but some on the East Coast, where we can make a comparison rather quickly between present use value and highest and best use value. What next? What happened next was we actually started to operate as a broker. And as we started to do that, we started to meet with builders and developers to see if they found our product useful. And we learned two things. Number one, the smaller investor builders and developers loved it. It was working. We were getting them sites that worked for townhome and small multifamily sites. But the larger builders and developers, so think the Vulcans of the world, were telling us that this product wouldn't necessarily work for their needs. And I was meeting with one of the acquisition managers at Vulcan, namely, and showed her the tool. And she said, well, this is really cool. But when you are underwriting investments based on one of the largest private balance sheets in the world, in this case, Paul Allen's balance sheet, Microsoft's co-founder with Bill Gates, we need large sites to be able to move that needle. So we need to make $50 million investments, and $50 million investments, there's not a lot of those. There's not a lot of single parcels that meet that criteria. So I asked, well, how do you guys make investments? And she said, well, we end up having to stitch together lots of properties to create sites large enough to create, larger size developments. Think 200 to, 500 unit apartment sites or office sites. And the thing that struck me was that the way that they went about stitching together multiple parcels, or the process of assemblage, was completely manual. So they would do what we started to call knock, talk, stalk, and walk. They would knock on people's doors. They would talk to them over a series of months or even years or decades, stalk the property owners and try to be in front of them as much as possible, and walk around neighborhoods to find good sites and good assemblages. And we thought it was pretty wild that a company that has done such an amazing job in Seattle in the real estate investment world and in the development space was still kind of implementing this manual strategy of going about creating these big sites. So came back to my co-founder, who at the time I think was 19 or 20, and asked him to perform what I thought would be a relatively straightforward calculation, which was, what are all of these properties worth when you look at every possible permutation or iteration or combination of properties in Seattle? How does their value change? What I learned was it was not a simple problem to solve at all. It was actually a massively difficult and complicated combinatorics and optimization problem. Not dissimilar from the combinatorics and optimization problems that Google tries to solve, where they're trying to take massive sets of data and massive sets of signals that they get from those looking for results, and they have to combine all of those different signals in a way where they're yielding the best possible results for the searcher, right? Think of Google in terms of searchers being buyers looking for property and sellers being owners of property, and those properties in the analogy of Google would be those trying to sell their products to searchers. So we took a swing at it, or I should say Devin took a swing at it, And 6 months later, and Devin's the kind of guy who gets things done in a week or two. 6 months later, he'd come out of the hole, as it were, and said, hey, I've got something to look at. And we took a look. And what we found was in the U.S., there's 135 million U.S. parcels, but there are 10 quintillion, which is a real number. I had to look it up because I'd never heard of it. So 10 with 19 zeros after it, possible combinations of properties or assemblages in the U.S. And those assemblages, we learned, can have very, very different values than the sum of the parts. It's kind of Gestalt theory. So that was how we started automating highest and best use and then assemblage. And now we are at a stage where we've actually proven some of these things. We've had 8 property owners who own homes sell together as a group. We underwrote those properties instantly and said they were a good site for 270 apartments, brought those to architects, brought those to JLL, one of our broker partners. They underwrote them. They corroborated the yield study and the massing. They corroborated value. And we brought the property to market, and we've got interest in those properties. The Zillow says they're worth 3.3 together. We recommended they would sell for about 7.5 million. We've got those properties looking to close north of $8 million. So, and now we've done this in multiple different scenarios. So there you have it. That is the evolution of City Builder. And you're the first person who's probably heard the whole story.
City Builder software and data analytics tools unlock a myriad of development opportunities across any number of asset classes. I asked Brian who his clients are today and where he sees the opportunity to grow.
We're still working with buyers and sellers. We've got partners who are brokers. So 13 of the top 20 commercial real estate brokerages in the country are now partners with City Builder. So the way this works is we connect buyers, so think investor, builder, developer, those looking for underutilized sites, with owners, so anyone who owns a commercially zoned real estate property. And once we've got a deal that looks as though it's coming together, we get one of our broker partners involved. So on the seller side, I'm only going to speak to Seattle because Seattle is where we've got the most rich information. We're operating in LA as well. But in Seattle, we've got over 10,000 sellers who have signed up. It's been mostly organic. We've spent less than $1,000 marketing. So people talk to their neighbors and they say, hey, our properties could be worth more sold together. We should sign up for this thing and find out how to do this. We automate some of that process. And then we've got, I think, 700 builders and developers signed up in Seattle. Again, completely organically. We've done zero marketing to builders and developers. We create that market along with our broker partners. When the deal closes, we share in a portion of the broker fees at close. So we're a licensed real estate broker in the state of Washington and California. We have the capacity to work in a number of states, around a dozen, but right now we're just focused on those two markets. The other thing that we haven't discussed yet is relatively new for us. It is not an active product, but it is something that will be active soon, and that is that we are the first iBuyer, if you're familiar with that term, or buyer making an instant offer in the commercial real estate space. So we announced about 45 days, maybe 60 days ago, that we would be launching a product where we're making instant offers on a very specific type of property in the commercial real estate world, mostly homes that are zoned for multifamily development. We decided to do that when we learned that a lot of homeowners are interested in the instant offer that companies like Opendoor and Knock and OfferPad and Zillow and Redfin are offering to sellers, but they're also aware that their properties have commercial value. So there's really nobody who's catering to those people who are looking for certainty, who are looking for convenience, but who are also aware that their property is more valuable to a commercial buyer than it is to a residential buyer. There's also just the convenience factor. Selling to a commercial buyer requires the commercial buyer to go through their process. And that process is much more manual, much more time intensive, and involves many more data sets than those that need to be looked over by a residential buyer. So if you're a residential buyer, you want to know, is this close to work? Is it close to schools? What's the condition of the property? Do I like the property? Those types of things. For a commercial buyer, there's a very different process that they go through to determine whether or not they want to buy the property. It's actually quite a bit less subjective than it is on the residential side. So we've done everything that we can do to automate the process of determining feasibility for commercial buyers. That involves right now roughly 50 different data sets that are streaming into our back end and informing an algorithm that looks at highest and best use and feasibility. And because we can do that process in seconds that's historically taken weeks or months, we can, with a relative amount of certainty, make offers on properties knowing that there's intrinsic commercial value. And we can offer a portion of that value as a premium to owners of those properties. So I'll give you an example. You might own a property that Zillow says is worth in Seattle $900,000. And you might get an instant offer from Zillow at, let's say, $900,000. And Redfin could make you an offer at $875,000 or what have you, maybe $925,000. If you're the owner and you're looking for that convenience and you're looking for the best price you can get quickly, City Builder may be the better option for you. We might make an offer at $975,000 or even $1 million. And if you're a seller in that situation looking for proceeds, you're relatively agnostic to who the buyer is. You're just looking for someone who's going to give you some certainty and close quickly. And our value and our offer in many cases, like the one I just gave you, will be higher. So what we believe is the case is that sellers will come to City Builder first to discover whether or not they have commercial value. And in the case that they're willing to go through the process with a commercial buyer of getting the best possible price and putting the product out to, or the home or the property out to the largest possible audience, they'll work with one of our partner brokers like JLL or you can think Kidder Matthews, Cushman & Wakefield, Colliers, any of these companies. And their brokers do a very, very fine job of putting the property out to as many buyers as possible. And we think that gives the seller the opportunity to get the most money. When the seller values convenience and they want certainty, we can make them an offer that in many cases will be better than any other instant offer. So it really comes down to providing the best possible experience for sellers, giving them quick information that wasn't available to them in the past, giving them some transparency, and showing them that there's more value there than they're often aware of, and giving them a premium for that value.
I am fascinated by the potential of companies like City Builder to transform the way real estate companies are built from the ground up and to disrupt long-held business models. I asked Brian what else we should know about City Builder and its plans for the future.
So we think there are three large constituents that City Builder needs to serve. The first of those is property owners. So if you own a property, you should understand what it's worth. In residential real estate, that's something that we're doing a pretty good job with. Companies like Zillow have been leaders in that space and spearheaded, you know, instant property valuations that give people at least an idea of the ballpark of the value of their property. And they do a good job connecting those owners to the professionals, the real estate brokers who live in those markets, work in those markets, have, you know, decades of experience in those markets and can help them find the most suitable buyer at the best price. In commercial real estate, that's not the case. If you own a gas station, or you own a strip mall, or you own a group of conjoined properties, or you own an office space, or you own an industrial site, the process by which you find out what the value of your property is a very manual, expensive, tedious, cumbersome process. And I don't know that there are many people that would disagree with that statement. The state of the art right now for commercial real estate is brokers. You go and talk to those people. So we've endeavored to create some transparency and some automation there. And that certainly helps property owners. Well, so that's constituent number one. Who is the largest property owner in most cities? If you look into the data, invariably, the largest property owner in every city is the city. It's the public. In Seattle, for example, we recently did an analysis of 4,000 or so publicly owned properties. And what we discovered is that if you took the 3.8% of most underutilized publicly owned property and converted it to highest and best use, you'd create about 7,600 housing units. If you take that number of housing units and multiply it by 1.5 people per housing unit, you have enough housing to put every homeless person in Seattle in a home. You could also look at those 10,000 units as filling the need for workforce housing or affordable housing. You could turn a portion of those into market rate housing. You could not sell those units and put those on a 99-year land lease and preserve ownership for the public, but still give the private sector the capability to develop those lots. And what's really beautiful about this whole way of thinking is that the city benefits more than anyone else, and thus the public benefits more than anyone else when these properties are developed to highest and best use. Well, why is that? Well, because when you take a property that is a, let's say, $5 million 90-year-old warehouse, and you turn it into 270 apartment units, you increase the taxable basis for that property by 10 to 20x. So instead of the city collecting, 1% of the $5 million, $50,000 a year, they start to collect 1% of the $50 or $100 million, which then gives them $500,000 to $1 million a year, vastly increasing the amount of money that the city gets from that, formerly publicly owned or currently publicly owned property that's being developed to highest and best use. You also change the use of that land from something that's relatively useful to maybe, let's say, a commercial builder who needs to store product on that site, to homes for 270 people, or homes for 200 people and new retail establishments on the ground floor. It's just a massive amount of efficiency capture. and it's a massive GDP augmenter. If you look on a national scale, one of the more interesting things, and this is something that is a good teaser for an article that's probably going to come out in the next month, we believe that you could increase the GDP of the United States somewhere between 4 to 6% a year just looking at publicly owned properties and transforming those from their current use to highest and best use. That's it. Simple. Is there a decade to two decades of work to be done there? Absolutely. There's a ton of work to be done there. Is there a lot of political willpower that needs to be garnered in that process? Without a doubt. But do we believe there's an alignment of the constituent groups to do that? Well, if you look at property owners, you look at cities, and you look at the third constituent, which is capital, or builders, developers, investors who take all of the risk to build these things, those builders and developers are looking for suitable sites. Their business models require them to find sites to be developed. And we believe we can use this technology to efficiently connect them to the owners of these sites, whether that's, the private sector or the public sector. So we think there's a massive alignment of interest all the way around. And whether you're on the, the right or the left or the center of the political aisle, if you improve these properties, you give more people access to the economic opportunity that cities provide. If you look at where the majority of job creation happens, it's the city. If you look at the best rated schools, they're in the cities. if you look at the best, you know, academic and sports and extracurricular programs, you look at the best colleges, they're in the cities. If you look at the best infrastructure, it's in the cities. If you look at the best services, police, fire, medical, it's in the cities. Cities represent an opportunity for people to have a high quality of life. Economic development councils and elected officials are charged with improving that quality of life constantly. And we think there's a high correlation between a high quality of life and improvement in land use.
Great to connect with Brian Copley of City Builder today. City Builder's software finds underutilized land that could be developed into more lucrative properties. The company has helped neighbors with single-family homes that could support multifamily apartment buildings sell together as a bundle for greater returns than if they'd sold individually. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Want daily interviews with real estate investors and none of the fluff? Go to bestevershow.com, where Joe Fairless interviews daily real estate investors and entrepreneurs about their best advice ever. Go to bestevershow.com.
And that concludes our show. I'm excited to follow Brian and City Builder's innovative approach to creating value for underutilized land. You can find out more about Brian and City Builder in the show notes. Please subscribe to the Real Estate Innovators and leave a review wherever you subscribe to podcasts, which helps us grow our audience. Until next time, innovators.